Good evening, dear colleagues. If you're listening to this live, then you know that today is the 29th of January 2024 and it's 7 o'clock in the evening. It's my pleasure to introduce Professor Dr. Harald Kittler to you. Harald is a professor at the Medical University of Vienna. The context of this presentation is that I had the privilege to listen to the presentation that you are going to hear in just a minute about 2 weeks ago at a conference that Professor Zielinski from the Medical University of Vienna, Christiane Teilinger from the same institution, and myself had organized at the Juridicum. And Harald's presentation was so outstanding that I asked him to do it once again for a broader audience. And this is exactly what's going to happen now. So you are listening, you will be listening to a presentation that Harald kindly had prepared for this event. It's about dermatology, it's about medical treatment and diagnosis, and it's about artificial intelligence in a really outstandingly brilliant way, trust me. Harald, thank you so much for being here. I think that's all that I should explain at the very beginning. You have the floor, and I'm going to share also your slides. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you for the invitation, and you may ask yourself why he's a dermatologist here speaking about artificial intelligence and clinical decision making. Well, because the little world of dermatology is something like the spearhead of AI in, let's say, in image-based diagnosis. And we have a lot of experience with that, and also the news that AI technology plays out in dermatology. But what I am going to tell you now is not only to deal with dermatology, but it also concerns the entire field of medicine and diagnosis, and also law and probably also philosophy a little bit. So when we think about the future, and usually AI has to do with the future, there are great promises. Also, there are not only promises, potential benefits, but there's also fear. When we think about the future, we usually add something, like flying cars or I don't know what robots that are working around and helping us or fighting with us. But when I want to challenge your view a little bit, because we should think about the future not adding something, but distracting something. Distracting something that in the future will not be needed anymore, like telephone boxes, for example. Today, they are not needed anymore, and you don't see them. And our kids don't even know what this is because they have their smartphones and they don't know what a telephone box is. And so are other things. And also, what should we think about something that can be distracted from the future in medicine, or let's be more specific, in diagnostic medicine? Well, I would say we can distract books when it comes to making a diagnosis. Of course, we still need books to learn, but and some prefer books to the internet or electronic sources. But for making a diagnosis, I don't think that books will be used anymore in a few years, or they're not even used now. What do I mean by diagnosis? You have a patient and you don't know what it is. Skin disease, for example, or any other disease, and then you wouldn't consult a book because it's, first of all, it's not with you. Your smartphone is with you. It's a little bit exhausting to look for what. If you don't know what it is, there are chapters, but in a book, there's a chapter always, you have a heading with the diagnosis, but you don't know the diagnosis. So what you're looking for is you look for images, for example, when we have skin diseases, that look very similar to the patient in front of you. And you, if you're lucky, you find something, and then maybe this is the diagnosis you needed. But this is very complicated. And the electronic sources like the internet or also electronic books are much better suited for this kind of purpose. If you don't know what a diagnosis is, you can scan the internet for images that look similar and also for information, tons of information very quickly. Let's make this more specific. For example, if you are a skin doctor or dermatologist and you have a patient like this, and you can ask ChatGPT what this is, and You can ask a colleague, of course, or you could ask a book, but you could also ask one of the foundation models. ChatGPT is one of these foundation models or large language models that are general purpose problem solvers, so to speak, and we can get in dialogue with them, and we can even send images. They're not only their large language models, but they also work with images, and we can have a conversation with them. Now, usually when we have a problem like this, we are facing a situation where we need a tool, and usually we are looking for, or what we get is a hammer. What do I mean by a hammer? A tool that can only do one thing, making the diagnosis of a skin disease. An artificial intelligence tool, for example, you can send this image to a website that takes images and gives you back possible diagnosis based on the image. For example, this is called AppSkinDX, and you can send this image there and you get back a diagnosis. But this app can only do this. You can't feed them, you can't ask the app, you can ask for therapy. This is what a hammer is. It's a one-purpose tool. But as I already told you, currently we are in a transition of not only using one-purpose tools like a hammer. The foundation models, why are they so revolutionary? Because they are multipurpose tools. And it's the first time, I think, in history that we have a tool, software, that has not been established for one specific purpose. It can have many purposes, and purposes that we don't even know now. And for example, you could have a dialogue with this foundation model, with ChatGPT, which is also a foundation model with a bot. And you can also send images and ask questions. And for example, I asked a question to a ChatGPT, and with this example, I show you an image of a dermatologic disease. Can you tell me what it is? And ChatGPT very nicely says, yes, of course, I can assist you. Please upload the image. And then ChatGPT answers, well, taken the history and this image, I think the skin condition is consistent with calciphylaxis, which is the correct diagnosis. It's a rare diagnosis. It's not an easy one. Not every dermatologist will get it. And it's something that is really helpful. But you can do more. What else could it be? You could ask ChatGPT. And then you have a list of differential diagnoses, vasculitis, diabetic, ulcer, and so on, necrotizing fasciitis, septic emboli, and so on. And all these diagnoses make sense. So it's a dialogue, but you can also ask, what should I do next? Or you can also ask, what is the probability of this diagnosis that you gave me? Just rank the diagnosis according to probability, and ChatGPT will do that. And you can also ask, how should I proceed? What is the next step? And ChatGPT will give you a good answer. Now, this is useful, and doctors are using it. And of course, ChatGPT is not the only large language model or foundation model out there that can be used for this purpose, but it's the most well-known, of course. Now, this could really enhance clinical decision-making. This general purpose machines, or general purpose software, also in medicine. But when we go a little back, when we take one step back, when we go back to the hammer tools that can only do one thing, they are more common, and large language models like ChatGPT have just started. There is no general purpose medical model like ChatGPT. When we go back to the tool that works like a hammer, we currently know how they work and how to use them, but we know how and what they do. But what we don't know with AI in medicine and clinical decision making is who should use it, when should we use it, for what should we use it, and why should we use it? And these are very important questions in clinical decision making. So we have to know how, but the other questions are not solved, and the other questions are as important as the know-how. Now, what are the other questions? The other questions are, who should be the user and what is the best user? And should we, for example, have different kinds of AI technologies in medicine for different types of users? The user, for example, of an AI technology, of an AI tool that makes diagnosis, could be a doctor, healthcare personnel in general, but also a consumer. You, for example, you who are not a doctor, you want to know what the skin lesion that you have is, and you could use an app, and the app could tell you what it is or what you should do. But that's not all we need to know if we use such technology. We should also know when it is wise to use it, for whom, who should be the target, everybody, only selected individuals, and what the aim should be. Should be the aim that we, for example, there must be some metric to measure how good these tools are. Should the aim be to increase the detection rate of melanomas? Should the aim be, for example, to make it more likely that a person who potentially has a disease goes or sees a doctor? So these are questions that are very important. Now, I can only tell you, or my main focus is on skin diseases and specific focus on neoplastic skin diseases. This is a very easy world, and I will explain to you in 2 seconds, and you will understand what I mean. The problem we're facing in dermatology is that we have bad ones, malignant lesions, cancer. These are the ones in red. Melanoma, basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and we have the good ones that are by far more common, like nevi, benign keratosis, dermatofibroma, and angioma, and so on. And the tool, or what we have to do, is to differentiate between the bad ones and the good ones. This is what you want to know when you go to, when you see a doctor, if you have a pigmented lesion like this. And for this tool, we can use, of course, AI. In this case, hammers, a tool that can only do one thing, to diagnose pigmented skin lesion, to differentiate the bad ones from the good ones. And we did that, and we showed that the tools that we have already, they can do that very well. And this has been published in the Lancet Oncology. The red line here indicates that there is no difference between humans, meaning experts, and AI with regard to making the correct diagnosis for these pigmented skin lesions. And on the left side, what you see is human underperformance. And you have different groups of humans depending on expertise. And on the lower part, you see those who are beginners that would be a first year resident. And on the upper part, you see experts with more than 10 years of experience. And you see there is an underperformance for all five groups, for the beginners, for the first year resident, and for the super experts. They are all doing worse than the AI in the realm of making correct diagnosis for pigmented skin lesions. And this was not the only study. There are many studies, there are 20, 25, and all the red things here indicate AI was better than experts. And the green thing here doesn't indicate that the humans were better. It indicates those studies where humans and AI had similar performance. So in no study, humans outperformed AI. Now, this is what I meant by we have to know how, but there is more than the know-how. Who should use it? And there's a special situation when it comes to skin disease, because the skin is easily accessible, even for consumers, even for layperson like you. So you can have an app and the consumer can use it. And a very special situation is that the consumer can be the target of the app. So the user and the target is the same person. And there are many consumer apps out there already where you can make diagnosis of your pigmented skin lesions. They tell you, is it a high-risk lesion or low-risk lesion, or should you see a doctor or not? You can download it from the App Store, from Android App Store, but also from iPhone App Store. You can use it. Now, this is a kind of selfie skin examination you can do, and you get an answer back that says red light, very dangerous, yellow light, well, so in between, or green light, it's all okay. And all these apps, they will tell you, no matter whether you have a green light, a yellow light, or a red light, of course, for legal reasons, they have to tell you, but you should go to a doctor anyhow, no matter what I tell you. This is, of course, the disadvantage of these apps. But the problem is with these apps that, for consumer purposes, they are calibrated in a way that they make a lot of false positive calls. Why? Well, they are trained, or they focus on not missing a malignant neoplasm, on not missing skin cancer. Why? Because then the companies would be liable, for example, and this would be a problem. So they are trained, or at least the product that you have in your hands then, they will do a lot of false positives. And they will do vague recommendations like, well, it's fine, it's good, it's in the green area, it's not suspicious, but see a doctor anyhow. This is a very vague recommendation. How much would you want to spend for this kind of recommendation that you should see a doctor anyhow? I wouldn't spend much. And also, tech-savvy individuals who are using their smartphones, they will use these apps. And the not so tech-savvy people, the older generation who doesn't use smartphones so often, they will not use these apps properly. And these patients we don't reach, and they are potential patients. And so we have a bias towards young and tech-savvy individuals with these apps. And because there is a large number of false positives, and if you spread such apps in the population, there will be an even larger number. We probably have an overload of already stretched healthcare systems with consumers that are not sick, but only the app says you are potentially sick or not even that, but you should see a doctor anyhow. And the aim of these apps, that they should improve access to specialists for those who need it. But in reality, we could reach the contrary. We, on the other hand, if so many people who are not sick will use the app and will be labeled sick and go to a doctor, then those probably who will need it, really need it, they will probably not get a specialist appointment. So we don't even know if the aim to improve access to specialists is really we really reach that aim with these consumer apps. Who regulates it? Who benefits from it? We don't know that. Now, the point is, with all these AI apps that are hammers, is that they can only do one thing: to diagnose pigmented skin lesions. And if you feed them with something out of scope, because they have no general, they are not general purpose AI, they have no knowledge about the world, they have no common sense, so to speak, they will fail miserably. And a typical example is, if you show such an app a brown spot on a banana, it will be lost. It can only choose between those seven possibilities it has been trained for. It's either melanoma, or it's a nevus or a vascular lesion, but a brown spot on a banana is not in the world, is not part of the universe of these systems, of these AI apps that are just hammers. Why is this important? Because banana problems are everywhere. If you distribute these apps, there will always be situations for the app that it hasn't been trained for. Not necessarily brown spots on a banana, but other situations. Tattoos, dirt, I don't know what, clothes, I don't know. But there are so many situations out there where the apps will fail miserably. So the point is, there are always situations that have not been represented well in the training set. For example, these apps, or many of them, have been trained with pigmented lesions only, and melanoma is usually pigmented, like on the left side, but there is also a non-pigmented, amelanotic variant of melanoma, and app will have difficulties to diagnose these amyloid optic melanomas correctly because they were not in the training set. So maybe it's a better idea not to give these apps to consumers. It is a better idea to give these apps to doctors or at least healthcare personnel. Now, how would doctors perform if they have these apps? Now, what comes now is these apps or AI in general is not really a competition now. It is not a competition because it cannot act alone. And I showed you before, there are many situations where you need the common sense of a human person, and you have to have a human expert using these apps for all the situations that may occur where the apps make stupid mistakes. Now, what we've done is to see or to test whether humans, when they use these apps, get better. So we tested the team collaboration between AI and experts. So now the apps are in the hands of experts. And we first tested the experts without AI support, and then we gave them AI support. For example, here you see that the AI said that this is 100% seborrheic keratosis, and then the doctors could change their original diagnosis. So first without AI support and then with AI support. And what we saw was very interesting, that of course the beginners, so first-year residents, for example, they start at a very low level. You see here on this axis, you see the percentage of correct diagnosis, correct answers. And you see without AI, they are doing not so well. Only 60% they got right. But with help, with AI support, they reached nearly 80%. Intermediate users, for example, third-year residents or fourth-year residents, they start at a higher level and also improve with AI. But you see experts, they start at a very high level because they're experts. And there is not much room for improvement with AI, they don't improve. So here we have a difficult situation, meaning AI makes mistakes. But if we want to collaborate with AI and if we want to have the benefit of AI for diagnosis, we have to trust AI. But if we trust AI, then, for example, it needs to be very reliable. Because if we change our diagnosis and the AI is not reliable, we probably do much worse than without AI. Or in other words, you need to be an expert to use these systems. But if you are an expert, you probably don't need it. Now, we did a very nasty thing also to test this. What we did, we simulated a rogue AI. What is a rogue AI? An AI that does mistakes. Very stupid ones, like in the banana problem. And also, we confronted the users with the rogue AI and we didn't tell them. And lo and behold, what you see is even the experts, when confronted with rogue AI or with AI that always does mistakes, even experts get worse with the AI system than without AI, or they underperform because they were misled by the AI. So we have a difficult situation here. AI is only useful if, or it's mainly useful if it is trustworthy, of course. But to be trustworthy, you need to be an expert to decide whether it is now trustworthy or not, because otherwise you cannot be critical. And then if you're an expert, you probably benefit the least. And the beginners, there's the danger that they follow blindly, and they follow blindly the AI, and even when it's misleading and making stupid mistakes. Now, the second and last question, then my talk will be over, is who should benefit, which patients, in which patients should we use AI for diagnostic purposes? And we also did this in prospective study. So the studies I showed you before were all very artificial, but we did this in a real-world prospective study, and we equipped doctors with this with a kind of AI system on a handheld smartphone, and the AI gave answers to exactly this problem, to pigmented skin lesions. And what you see here is the diagnostic performance of first-year residents and the diagnostic performance of experts and the diagnostic performance of AI. And you see, as in the other problem, as in the other study, the first-year resident was, the diagnostic performance of the first-year resident was much lower than AI. So first-year residents would probably benefit from it in single lesions. This was the problem of a single suspicious lesion in a patient. But there are other problems, other patients, patients who have hundreds of lesions. In a patient with a single suspicious lesion, we want a high sensitivity. In a patient like this with hundreds of lesions, we want a high specificity. What does it mean? High specificity is a low number of false positive. Why? Because if you have here a specificity of 90%, meaning 10% false positives in 300 lesions, meaning you have to remove 30 lesions, this is unacceptable. And you see here in this problem, when there is high specificity needed, the first-year resident and the experts outperform the best AI system, because these AI systems are maximized for sensitivity and not for specificity. So we also have to keep track of when do we use the system, and not only the know-how alone is not enough, which patients, and maybe we should use it differently in different types of patients. So this is an optimization problem. What do we optimize? The number of correct diagnoses with a fixed threshold, meaning a fixed sensitivity or specificity, or should we use a dynamic threshold depending on the situation? We humans are very good at changing our thresholds because we are humans and we change our thresholds according to the situation. This makes us good doctors. Now, this threshold can be very low. Then you have a high sensitivity but a low specificity, or the threshold can be very high, then you have a lower sensitivity but a very high specificity. Now the question is, what should you optimize when you train AI? Accuracy, the number of correct diagnoses, or the outcome? Because sensitivity and specificity are important for the outcome. My last slide, or nearly my last slide, just to show you what I mean. If you optimize the number of correct diagnoses, you do this with supervised learning, machine learning, then you optimize the number of correct diagnoses. But if you optimize the outcome, you optimize the management strategies, because diagnoses lead to management strategies and they have an asymmetric discount. What do I mean? It's worse to miss a melanoma than to remove a benign lesion. But how much worse? This is a human value. This is a human value that we choose together with the patient. Now, do we want AI also to incorporate these human values? How should we do it? Now, we could give penalties for wrong decisions, and we could give rewards for good decisions. For example, here, when the AI correctly diagnoses a melanoma, meaning it is removed, it gets a reward of 5 points. But when it misses a melanoma, it gets a penalty of minus 10. When it incorrectly removes a benign lesion, it gets a penalty that is moderate, only minus 1. And if it correctly diagnoses a benign lesion, when it doesn't remove a benign lesion, it gets a moderate reward. And if you optimize this, then you also get an improvement in accuracy and more accurate management decision, meaning that if you include values like this into an AI system, experts, doctors who are using this AI system, they will perform better than with the AI that has been trained to maximize accuracy or the number of correct diagnoses. So in other words, including human values is beneficial. So I skipped that because of time, and I skipped that. Just, this is the final slide. In dermatology, at least, making decisions like should a lesion be removed or not is a very easy decision. And we have to ask ourselves, is it really necessary to use AI here, which is can be very complicated and time-consuming? This is a so-called Ruby Goldberg machine. This is, if you know it, he invented machines that do very complicated things to achieve very easy tasks, very easy goals. So what I want to tell you is, whenever we use AI, maybe we should use it because there's a simpler way to have a similar result, because making the decision of whether a lesion should be removed or not does not necessarily involve the necessity to include AI in this process. So what next? The large language models. So what I expect is that the hammers, the one-purpose tools, will be replaced by general-purpose tools that act like our brain, because our brain is the best general-purpose tool on Earth, because it can do anything we want. And now we are coming into the age where also there is software that has general purpose or that has not been trained for a specific purpose. And this poses new questions of regulations and legal questions, because how do you regulate a system that has not been trained for a specific purpose, and you don't even know for which purpose it will be used? And this is an open question for open purpose AI. So I spoke too long, probably, but I hope this steers some questions and this gets the discussion moving.
Thank you so much, Harald. You didn't speak too long at all. It was 31 minutes of really, really interesting input once again. Thank you so much for this. And please excuse me for asking some probably very stupid and also legal questions, of course, because this is the background of myself and of most or many of the audience. So my first question would be, it's a very simple one, would be, are your students at the moment educated on this? So do they receive any training in the field? And if so, what's their response to this?
Well, the education in medical school for how to use machine learning tools and AI in general is not very good. So they learn by doing, and this is not optimal. We should have it in our curriculum, but it's not implemented. Now, we also have not been trained for using Facebook or social media, and we learn how to use it. And unfortunately, it will be like this also when it comes to AI in medicine. It's learning by doing, but we start to incorporate it a little bit in the curriculum, but we could do more.
Well, the problem now with learning by doing in this domain, so let me state, I'm not really wondering about this and I'm not astonished about this, because I think this is exactly what's happening in more or less every domain, including my own, right? So students start using more or less the same tools now for legal purposes as well, and there is no systematic approach yet. So that's not really outstanding. This is like in any other discipline. However, my question now is, I mean, one of the main points that you are making is that within those systems there are value decisions taken, such as whether it's better not to identify a melanoma in one case versus to identify wrongly something as a melanoma in 10 cases, and somebody is putting this into software. Somebody takes these decisions when writing the software. And if students are not systematically taught in this, neither do they know what exactly is in the software, nor did they influence what should there be in the software. And the outcome is a huge black box on top of the already existing black box problem that we are facing when it comes to AI. So my gut feeling of this would be it's very different from Facebook, because most likely your students won't use Facebook for professional purposes, but they suddenly learn to drive cars now without knowing anything about a wheel. That would be, in a way, the analogy, perhaps. And my question then is, a brilliant talk, but which impact does it have on the next generation of medical students then? And what would need to happen here? Who is the institution needing to take care of this? Is it the legislator? Is it a regulator? Is it the medical school on its own? Is it every professor? Is it society? Who is it?
So my answer to this would be everybody, including the tech companies who are giving us these tools. And unfortunately, this is, let's say, they put tools out there that can be used, like ChatGPT, for making diagnosis, and they let us find out if this is useful. But the price to find out has to be paid by society. So I think everybody is responsible, but of course, more medical schools, the tech companies who are producing these tools. Of course, there is training, but also, of course, the legal system has to think about it. Without making up an atmosphere where innovation gets stuck because of too many legal regulations. You could also overregulate, and this kind of balance is very difficult. Mm-hmm. But to your first part, I agree completely with you. I think what you meant is also these systems are not transparent. We don't know how they have been trained, what kind of threshold they use. They have to be transparent. And of course, we always have to keep in mind that humans, when you go to an expert, they're also not 100% transparent. So is it really, and this would be my question to a legal expert, can we demand from AI more than we demand from humans doing the same job? So how transparent should AI be in comparison to humans? Mm. And of course, there is a danger of overregulation, but also there is a danger of, that we forget that also humans, when acting as doctors, have the responsibility to be transparent. And also, when AI is replacing humans, it's always because humans act robotic, because otherwise they wouldn't be replaced by a robot. So how do we as a society generate an atmosphere that prevents us from acting in a robotic fashion and getting replaced by robots? This is a very interesting question.
Mm-hmm. But about the transparency issue, I think there is an additional problem here, because when I go to a medical doctor because I have 300 lesions on my back and I want them to be checked, the doctor is zero transparent to me, being a layperson, right? So I don't know what they are doing, and if the person then tells me everything is fine, I trust that person and that's it, and I go. And if the person tells me, listen, we should have a closer look on this or that, I trust that person again, and I trust I probably have some kind of social scoring system because other people trusted that doctor and the outcome was good, etc. But I don't really know anything, and I wouldn't expect my doctor to tell me, listen, we have a 65% probability that this is a melanoma. Do you really want me to have a closer look or not? I wouldn't expect this. But what I would expect would be that the doctor has some kind of a system in it, in their training, and that they take the right decision, whatever that right decision might be. There might be people like myself being rather risk averse in such a situation and arguing I would prefer to take one out that is benign than leaving it inside, and others might be less risk averse here. So, but that's happening all the time. What's new here is now that this system is also intransparent to the doctor. So neither the patient nor the doctor know about what's really happening if a score is the outcome of this. And that might produce, again, some kind of trust problem, because then I do not only need to trust the doctor, but I also need to trust the system the doctor is using, which might or might not work, right? And I'm not sure yet how we should, who should really, I mean, the outcome of this from a legal point of view would be We need to do a risk assessment of the product the doctor is using. That would be a rather traditional reply, and that would mean rather rigid market intervention. You can't simply build an airplane, right? That would be the answer, right? But that implies again that these industries follow European standards and that European standards can be enforced and all this. And I'm not sure whether this is going to happen to be. I mean, what I see at the moment is a jungle of things coming. Medical experts not really understanding fully the technical decisions leading to an outcome and the chaos at the very end. Two questions. Is my picture correct or did I miss something? And if it's correct, what should we do? I mean, it's very nice to have such a debate, but I'm not sure whether this will have any impact.
No, I agree with you. And I think your picture is quite correct, especially when it comes to consumer products. Yeah. But with the new regulations, of course, for medical products, there is an oversight of regulators. Yeah. And that can always be criticized, but it's regulated and there have to be some benchmarks, and there are. And also these products are regulated according to the risk they pose, and, mm-hmm. and they have to be constantly updated if they change, and they have to be transparent. So there is a regulation. So the jungle is the consumer products, mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Not the products in the hand of physicians. Whereas there has always been a kind of regulation, and now it's fortified by the EU, by the European mm-hmm. Union, and I think it's a good thing. Now again, you said it's like building planes. Well, yes, but of course a plane has to fly. Yes. And there are benchmarks also for diagnostic systems. They have to have a certain benchmark. So if they just do wild guessing, but between flying and performance in the air, there's always room when it comes to diagnostic system, what still works and could be useful. So what I would say, some kind of jungle, when a certain benchmark is reached, the plane flies. Yeah, and there are also different kind of machines that have their advantages and disadvantages. Some kind of jungle is also useful, because otherwise there would be no evolution. If we have so tight regulations that no yota can be changed, otherwise it would be against the regulations. The systems cannot be modified and will not get better. So to find the right balance here, this is really the art. What is the impact of that? I'm completely dumb when it comes to legal things. I can only do the science part and the diagnostic things. And from this point of view, I would say benchmarks have to be met, but too tight regulations probably will at least challenge evolution.
Yeah. Let me ask a very stupid question about the market, because you mentioned now that the jungle is worse when it comes to consumer products and professional products are better controlled when it comes to the quality because of the medical device regulations in Europe. When you look into the market now, your market, I mean dermatology and diagnosis for dermatology, I would assume that most of the consumer products are not certified as medical devices. So there is a complete jungle there. And I would also assume that most of them are not European. Whereas when it comes to the professional sector, of course, certification, yes, and probably more European products. If that were correct, and please correct me if it's not correct, but if it were correct, then the problem we are running into would be most probably an advantage, a competitive advantage of consumer products, because it's cheaper not to be regulated, and a further shift to non-regulated jungles. If we get tighter regulation in the professional market, which is not what we want, right? Probably.
True. And, you know, you can make some laws and have a certain aim, and then you see, well, we reach the opposite. The consumer products are difficult because, yes, there is, I would say, many products from outside the European Union. It's not so tightly regulated, although many of them are certified as class one medical devices. They can't make diagnosis on their own. They just give like feedback, like your blood pressure is over something, or so they don't make diagnosis. The point is that we have to educate those who are using these products, and they are not safe when using them with uncritically. So this has been, I think, this has been an omission in the digital age from the beginning. We were not prepared for social media, and we were not prepared for using consumer healthcare products in a broad sense. So if everybody's using it, probably we are doing no good. So if everybody can measure his or her blood pressure every minute, probably we would create more sick people and we would make healthy people sick. So we don't know. So my recipe for this, I think it's very difficult to counteract legally, but we should counteract with education, educating consumers to critically use these products.
Mm-hmm. And the right place to do that would be in schools or where? Okay, schools.
Well, yes. Well,
I was in school, the personal computer was invented when I was in school, right? So it could be that would be quite out. I mean, the typical patient is not in their 20s, right? So it might be...
I'm not an education expert. I don't know how to educate the public, but there are experts out there who are thinking about that and having great ideas. And they should think about how to educate consumers to use these products and be critical with this kind of information. I don't know how. Like, you educate people that it's not doing you well if you smoke. So there are ways.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, there is an input coming now from the audience. Somebody states here, detailing, for example, the patient populations from where the trainings data were used. I assume you would agree to this as a measure, right?
Yes, and in the medical device products, usually you have a kind of disclaimer saying, for example, if you look at some skin screener apps or where you can check your moles, it says you shouldn't use it. You shouldn't use it if you have skin type 5 or 4 or 6, or if you're very dark skin, because this population was not included in the training set. And yes, this belongs to transparency. I think the tech companies or those who are producing this app should tell us what was in the training set.
Mm. But again, that produces, again, all kinds of biases, by the way. You mentioned this very briefly. One of them might be that whole groups of populations never make it to training sets, and whole groups of a population never make it to install such an app because they don't have the device, they don't have the technical knowledge, etc. So there is a lot of bias and inequality coming with this. And that's, again, a legal problem. It's a social problem, but it's also a medical problem in some way, at least a public health problem, right? And I'm, again, asking a stupid question, who should take care of this, right? And
it's true, but some bias is part of the question. For example, if you look for skin cancer, the bias is that patients or individuals with lighter skin get more skin cancer, and individuals with darker skin less often. This is not a racial bias, because it's the same with children. Children are also not included in the training set because they don't get skin cancer. So it's not a racial bias. It's a bias that is somehow is inherently included in the question.
Can be But not necessarily, right? If it's technically more difficult to take pictures of dark people than of people with light skin, might also be an incentive for a producer not to take too many dark skin examples then. And true. I mean, I'm not sure whether this would be, I mean, in the existing legal situation, whether that would ever be found out by someone, right? If something like that happened. And it might even be that the producer doesn't know, right? What those unknown unknowns are in such a scenario.
I just wanted to say that not all bias
is racial or irrational.
It's also sometimes unavoidable to have some bias, to have some shift. This is not every population can be, you cannot have an unbiased population if you have a specific question, because sometimes the population is biased because of the question.
Yeah, true. One very simple question, which is, do you think, I mean, is it a day-to-day routine at the moment that that your patients show up with something coming from a consumer product and ask you to have a look into this?
Yes, it happens.
Or is this still rather rare? And if it isn't rare any longer, is there some kind of ethical standard among your discipline how to deal with this? If a patient comes with some kind of Dr. Google self-diagnosis, what to do then?
Well, there is no kind of general ethical standard, but a personal ethical standard is to take it seriously and not to find it laughable, because usually the individuals are afraid or then they seek advice. The problem is just that most often, so at least in my experience, it is false positive. So somebody is sent to the doctor, said it is dangerous, but it's not. Then you have to calm the patient, and this is, of course, the duty of the doctor then to do that and not to laugh at the patient because he thought help. And 10, 20, 30 years ago, it was books, and now it's the internet, and now it's also machine learning. This will happen all the time. But with this kind of consumer apps, it's on a new level, I think. Mm-hmm. And it happens rather often now.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, from an economical point of view, that's also interesting because it shifts economic burden somewhere and profits to another place, right? So the app producer makes the money and the social security system needs to clean the garbage out because of the false positives, right?
This is what I meant, that the society is paying for the testing of what the tech companies are giving us. And you are absolutely right. I couldn't have said it better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, which perhaps leads me to one of the last questions I have, which is, what would you predict that's going to happen in the future here in Austria? Would you predict that there will be a huge societal debate about how to proceed with this? Will it be that all of us are waiting for the politician or the law to sort all this out? Or will it be just like with, I don't know, the invention of the car or the invention of the PC, that it will be some kind of chaotic situation for the next years and we will finally end up in a situation nobody foresees today?
No, it's, well, you know, it's very difficult to speak about the future. But
yeah, particularly in 45 now. Yeah,
true. I would predict it will be a mix of everything you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I would hope that we could have more discussions like this. And that more, I think it's very important what you're doing. And this raises sensibility, and everybody is involved, not only the caretakers and the legal, the regulators, the legal part and politicians, but also the users and consumers. And what I think is a little bit an omission is that we do not involve patients and consumers so much in these decisions and discussions. Mm-hmm. We can't leave it to the legal system and to the regulators alone. We also have to know what the individuals, the consumers, the society wants from AI in healthcare. And we have to discuss it openly and non-emotionally, with an open end, and also not filled with fear. There is no need for fear. So I would say we should keep the conversation going. This is my hope. If this will act out like this, I don't know. The danger is that we have some stakeholders who have their interests, the industry, the legal system, the politicians, and the stakeholders, and also the doctors. I'm a doctor, but we also have our interests, and the interests of the individual interests will, let's say, paralyze the evolution to use the system widely.
Thank you so much, Professor Kittler. I completely agree with you and share your view that we need more discussions like this one. And I'm very, very grateful that you again gave us 1 hour of your precious time to continue with this discussion. Thank you so much for this. Thank you to everyone who listened to us. I hope that we stay in touch. I hope that you stay interested. And in particular, today, even more than usual, I hope that all of us stay healthy or become as healthy as possible in the near future. Hope to see you soon. Take care and have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.